The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina. Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only parking lot etiquette podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual. And oh boy, do we have some things to get to, as it was yet another Labor Day classic between the Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, as what was a pretty back and forth wild game got even kookier in the final few minutes, where Brett Lowther just about won it on a 30-yard field goal, probably a 60-yard field goal, sorry, just needed a few more yards, or if he was facing the other direction, I think he might have made it, because there was a pretty good breeze going that way.
Or if he was, as I actually got several people texting me asking if I had taken over the Three Down Nation Twitter account, saying that if he was Sergio Castillo, he also would have made it.
Yes, but I don't think there were too many other kickers in the league who would have made that kick with that strong, with a decent wind going that direction, at least.
No,
I don't think it affected the entire kick, because we only really noticed it on kickoffs for the most part, where like the ball was really traveling high that way, but the flags weren't moving a whole lot on the goalposts, because I think they're just kind of at ground level.
Yeah.
So it's when the ball gets up in the air is when it kind of gets a little screwy. So that's why he almost sort of made it, despite not it just getting completely knocked down.
I thought, like, it's funny. Like, I went from full celebration mode, being the Bombers fan that I am, to going, oh shit, to going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, because it looked good, like, especially watching on TV.
Well, that's what I heard from people watching on TV. They used, like, the end zone camera, so you didn't see the depth of the kick. You just saw, like, if he had the leg, that thing was split right down the middle.
Oh, and 100%. And I feel like the TSN cameraman, whoever they were, did an excellent job of, like, backing out last second to really build the tension, because you're right. You see it off the right foot, you think it's good, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, there's Lucky
from the press
Whitehead
box. I
yards out.
Knew like pretty soon, like, no, that wasn't going to make it.
Yeah,
but the whole time I was standing up there, because like at that point of the game, it's gone so crazy, I can't sit down.
No,
and I'm like, he doesn't have. I'm like, I understand why they had to try it, but Brett just doesn't have that leg.
No,
sorry.
Sergio Castillo, he is not.
No, then he's probably one of the few kickers that probably make that kick. I mean, Boris Beattie has the leg, but he'd kick it into the left-hand stands or something. So
it would be like kicking. It would be like college kickers on NCAA 25.
Yeah. So that is not really the point of the episode. We will talk about the biggest issue facing this team right now, which is the defense. We are going to talk about the hit on Miles Brown and the comments, once again, from Winnipeg Blue Bombers president Wade Miller. And then we will look a little bit ahead to this week's Banjo Bowl with the question, is this now a must-win game?
Ooh, spicy.
But in the rarity of times, John actually came to the table with something to discuss on this episode. So since he can better describe this story than I can, since it involves him and his lovely wife, Lacey, I will let him now take over from here.
Thank you, Joel. Okay, so Lacey and I run to the grocery store in advance of the Labor Day Classic. We were heading to her mom and dad's, grabbing a dessert, you know, the usual kind of things a person does. I am driving our minivan. We park at the grocery store, okay? Park, Lacey and Maya run in, they come back out. The way ahead of me is clear. There is nobody in the spot directly in front of me. So, as it can sometimes be a little hard to back a minivan out, I'm like, I'm just going to pull right ahead. And then somebody else decides that they are going to pull into, and quite aggressively, I might add, it's not like the old, like, turn on the blinker and wait. They quite aggressively claim the spot, as it was a premium spot right near the front of the grocery store, okay? So I mutter under my breath, you jackass, as I go from drive to reverse, and now have to back out extra long as this person aggressively pulls into the spot directly in front of me and take my shame and three-point turn back out my van. So Lacey brings up the point that me, the person looking to just drive straight forward and leave the parking lot, I am the jackass. Well, I think the guy who couldn't wait 2 seconds for me to drive through the spot is in fact the jackass. What say you, Joel Gasson, and of course our seven listeners?
I'm going to side with Lacey on this one. I think overall, like, if I have to pick one person, I'm leaning more towards you.
Okay.
Because one, there is the line. You're probably not really supposed to drive over that, I assume. Fair. Two, yeah, like, I mean, it can be difficult to see who's coming from where. So I think there is a bit of mutual jackassery all around here. In, like, actual fairness, like, you probably shouldn't be pulling ahead. He probably shouldn't. They probably shouldn't be pulling in so aggressively.
Right.
But at the end of the day, if there's an open spot, most people are going to start going into it. And it can be difficult to tell if a car, especially... Was, like, were there lots of cars parked around you?
Yes. Like, this is one of the, like, we literally had the spot, like, directly beside the handicap spot. So, this isn't, like, in the back end of the parking lot. This is, like, if you're doing a quick run in and out and grab your last few snacks for Labor Day, this is the spot you want. So, there were other vehicles around, yes.
So, I could see why, for the person on the other side, it could have been difficult to see whether you were coming or not.
Naturally, but once you saw I was coming, like, they definitely, there was a moment of eye contact where they could see I was pulling out, and they just kept going. Like, I don't think if I put this in, I think they're doing a little kissy-kissy of the bumpers if I don't put this thing in reverse. So, I still think I'm in the right, because I think you can just wait the 2 seconds. Like, I know if I see somebody doing the pull-through, as somebody who is a shitty parker, great driver, shitty parker, I'll be the first to admit it, especially in my 2 fairly large vehicles.
Especially since you got the truck, because, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, that truck.
That's how truck drivers park, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right. That's what we do. In fact, I should be up on the curb. I should be taking up 2 spots and definitely driving forward. So I leave it to you, our 7 listeners. If we had a Twitter account, this is where we put out a poll. But I feel like that other guy was the jackass. And I'm sure they're probably a decent person, a good human being, but it was enough for me to utter the term jackass. So if that person happens to be one of our 7 listeners, you yourself are not a jackass. It was just a jackass move.
Oh, I'm just hoping now it actually is someone that listens to this show.
And we can get their side of the story.
Then I would 100%, well, like, we would be interviewing them next week.
Oh, 100% open. That would 100% be the open. Okay, this parking situation, what happened here? So feel free to chime in at FraserPXP on the Twitter. I refuse to call it by its other name until Elon refers to his own kids by their real names. What's your handle again? It's at JGasson_21.
Yes.
Done.
Yes. So, yeah, I think right now it is currently sitting at 2-1 towards John being the jackass. And, that's, well, fair. I mean, Lacey's votes probably count for the most, if we're being fair.
So far I have my best friend and my wife disagreeing with me. So it's a great sign that I'm clearly right.
neither of us were really right about the riders last week heading into the Labor Day Classic. And I think a lot of people, not necessarily not only on the outcome, but it was a weird offensive explosion of a game from 2 teams who looked pretty inept offensive coming into that game. So we will talk about the Labor Day Classic, the Banjo Bowl, and a whole lot more. But John, for the Pile Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
First off, it's always usually the best bang for your buck in terms of Saskatchewan craft beer. And it's even better, I think, still right now at Sobeys Liquor. Black Bridge Brewery is on, like, Bananas Land sale right now. I got 4 Wheat Burst for $11.99. I think I got 4 IPAs for $12.99. So leftover from Labor Day is one of those Wheat Burst. As summer seemingly fades, it is the perfect summer beer. And stealing from Lacey, because she disagrees with me about the parking situation, one of her lucky bastard Saskatoon Berry Iced Teas. They do appear to have stock again. We haven't talked to Bryce. I was supposed to see him tonight, but kids getting in the way of that. But it looks like the shortage is over, because I've seen it at the last couple stores I've been to.
Yes. Yeah, there's some around. We've kind of sort of done the thing, but not completely. I, too, picked up a Black Bridge mixer pack a couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
And there was a Suedo Lager still in my fridge. Admittedly, not my favorite Black Bridge brew, but still easy drinking and quite crushable. But, yeah, not usually my go-to.
Oh, that's fair. The IPAs, like, this batch of the Black Bridge IPA seems to be a little lighter, if that makes any sense. Like, I know I'm having a Wheat Burst tonight, but I had, and maybe it's just because the vibes were right, and I had smoked some pork belly, and it was Labor Day.
Awkward pause. I wasn't sure where that was going.
No. I had smoked some meats, and went over for the Labor Day Classic, and I was just dummying the IPAs, which I normally don't do. So I'm not sure if it's more crushable or if I was just in the most crushable of moods as I typically get on Labor Day Sunday.
I'm going to go with the latter rather than the former.
Oh, certainly. I mean, anybody that knows me knows I love my beers and football and Labor Day, so, and smoked meats, of course.
Mm-hmm. The Riders probably might have gotten smoked on Sunday, weirdly enough, had Zach Kolaris not gotten injured in that game. and we will talk about the play that led to him leaving that game in a bit. But yeah, I tweeted it during the game. When 2024 Winnipeg Blue Bombers are shredding you offensively, like they did for much of that first half, that's a concerning sign.
Oh, 100%.
And it's not just this isn't like a bad, just a one-off bad game. I mean, arguably three of their last four games, the defense has been the issue. Mm-hmm. Like, they were really good against Ottawa, obviously, and the weather helped in that case a little bit, kind of slow down the offenses. But, I mean, they got slashed against Edmonton along the ground.
Yes.
If not for luck, quite frankly, on getting three goal line stops against Toronto, they lose that game easily by at least two or three scores.
Yes.
Because, I mean, they still got to the one a bunch of times. They still got to the one four times. You can't just brush that aside because they made the stop.
No, and you made that point because I'm like, what are you talking about? They haven't been that bad. They came up with those three goal line stops. You're like, John, they got to the one.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yes.
It's not that. Like, I mean, the one time maybe the Riders turned it over nearby, but for the most part, the Argos drive down to the one, and there's usually a good number of chunk plays in there at that time as well. And then we saw last week, I mean, the Riders did the thing you should generally do against the Bombers, though there's one important part that they were missing. They did shut down Brady Oliveira, but Zach Kolaris decided to remember who he was and throw for over 200 yards in the first half.
and I was texting you this, and I almost tweeted it, but I was trying to just enjoy the game with my family, especially because Connor decided at kickoff to turn heel at this game. Connor has always been a Riders fan to align with Lacey, Maya, and his grandparents. And at kickoff, he goes, I'm a Bombers fan now. So Max had to take off his shirt to give to Connor. I had to take off my jersey to give to Max, and I had the backwards hat. So I was taking it in, so I wasn't going to tweet it out, but anybody that's out there that says I'm a Zach hater, I consider it a Zach realist. Wow, his best game by far in about 2 years. He was getting the ball out quick. He was making the right reads, the deep reads. Like, everything was clicking for Zach Kolaris, and that's the Zach Kolaris you pay $600,000 for. He just hasn't been there much. So, Zach rediscovered vintage form in that one, which, as a Bombers fan, was super encouraging to see. But as a Riders podcaster, it shouldn't be that easy, because as a guy that's watched every single down of Bomber football for basically the past 6 years, seven, eight, 9 years, maybe, whenever PVRs became a thing, it's been a long time since the Bomber offense looked that good. And I think that's less of a product of Winnipeg figuring it out and more of a product of Saskatchewan just being real bad on that night.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw chunk plays again, as we've seen a number of times. And I think what was concerning was, I mean, the Bombers were without Stanley Bryant Jr., who, while not at the, you know, elite level he once was at left tackle, is still pretty good.
Oh, 100%.
And it was still, you know, an improving offensive line for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Yes.
And the Riders only managed one sack in the game. They got a little pressure at times, but for the most part, we know what makes Zach Kolaris crumble, and that's pressure in his face.
Right.
So why there were as many like three and four man rushes, I don't know. Like, it's like every second down, pretty much you got to be blitzing on this guy. Like,
yeah, and that's how you beat him. And I mean, I maybe that's because they were worried about Oliveira. Like when the Bombers offense is at their best, you're so scared of Brady that.
Yeah, I mean, for a bit, sure, but eventually CFL teams, if after a quarter aren't able to run the football, they're basically just going to stop trying. And that's pretty much what happened in that game.
100%. Like, Brady Oliveira only had 12 carries, right?
Yeah.
Streveler had seven, but again, most of that was because Streveler likes to scramble. So it just seems like maybe they were hyper-focused, but what I see from people that are smarter than me was a lot of just soft zone coverage that allowed Kolaris to kind of pick it apart. You weren't blitzing.
And, I mean, and like, I know a lot of people like to talk about the soft zone. The zone, I don't even want to call it the soft zone. The zone that they play works when you get pressure on the quarterback.
Yes.
Because that's the whole point. Like, if you play man-to-man, you got to be a little more... It's hard to play man-to-man, so I understand why a lot of teams don't do it, because you need to have the horses in the backfield to do it. The Riders have a few, but there's especially that one spot, you know, the Williams-Henderson sort of spot has been a bit of an issue for them in terms of being able to solidify that. If they had four guys across the way that they really trusted, I think they would maybe do it more.
Which I think against Winnipeg, you know, would have worked, because again, the whole way that you make Zach Collaros bad is you play a zone, but you get that pressure. Mm-hmm. So Zach looks to a receiver, locks in, makes eyes with him, sends hearts through his eyes, then finally decides to throw. And then you're able to have somebody that he doesn't really see come underneath and make a play, which was not happening at all on Sunday.
No, not at all. He was only intercepted the one time. And it wasn't even really, it was kind of a weird pick. I don't know. I don't remember exactly, but it was just like, it's concerning. And like, this is supposed to be the bread and butter of this team. The offense isn't without its issues. I mean, they basically probably only really got going offensively. Like they were fine in the first half. Like they were good enough of an offense in the first half to win a football game. They got rolling in the second half because they got the ball a lot more, just because Winnipeg basically couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
Because your take on, Chris Trevler learning to throw in the NFL has obviously gone completely up in flames.
it certainly has. And I can tell you that there are people that I talk to in Winnipeg media that agree with that and have been like, no, dude, I've been at practice. Yeah. You're wrong. So,
So if he has to play this week, that'll be interesting to see how that goes, but
single wing, just like Iowa. Let's go.
So, I mean, did that play a role in the offense getting back into it? Maybe, but I mean, I think overall the offense performed at a level we sort of expect them to. It was certainly an improvement over the week before against Toronto, which is probably all you can ask for them. They just needed, you know, they didn't even need to completely shut the door on the Bombers. They just needed another stop or two in that first half, and they probably win that game. Or if Mario Alford doesn't try to grab that one that bounces over his head. But again, that's like the week Brett Lowther missed four kicks. Like, it's a very simplistic thing to say that obviously this doesn't happen. They win the game, and in this situation you could make that theory, but everything happens differently from then on out regardless, so who knows.
The whole butterfly effect, if you will. Yeah, you know, the classic Ashton Kutcher movie.
Mm-hmm. So I mean and just to clear it up, because I know people are still having some confusion around it, the knee he took in the end zone on the kickoff, even if he let the ball roll through the end zone, now that is still a rouge. It has been for a couple of years, so the rouge was going to be applied regardless there, so that was not a mistake by Mario Alford.
No. Tipping it off his hands and not knowing where it went afterwards was. And it's funny because, like...
I get it. Like, in retrospect, obviously, he just should not have put his hands up. Right. But in the moment... Well, in the moment, your instinct is to try to catch the football, obviously. Absolutely.
Well, and that's it. And I mean, too, I think you're trying to catch the football because even if you're able to just catch it and go down, you're getting the ball, you know, at least your 10-12 yard line. Let's face it, if that ball goes over his head, I think he was thinking worst case scenario, you know, when you're getting out of the one or two and at least you've got a chance. But yeah, that was just a great special teams play there by Nick Hallett as well, getting down.
The punt was absurd. Like, it was a hooker, and it took that, like, it landed in a right spot just to make an absolutely ridiculous bounce that you just don't see in the CFL that often.
Right. Unless you watch Winnipeg football, because he's been known to do that a few times. So, but it's one of those. I remember talking when, you know, things were going well, and I remember being on this very platform and saying, well, it's good that they don't need a defensive score to win. They don't need a Super Mario return to win like they have in previous years. And dare I say it, they're almost back to that point because of the other mistakes they're being made. I wish that the CFL.ca would track drops.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like to me, every single time the Riders had a chance to build some momentum, there was just a flat out drive killing drop. Like,
there's been a few,
like, it seemed to happen two or three times. Again, I'd had about seven beers, so I don't remember the specifics, but it seemed like every time there was a play that could have changed some momentum, it was like, oh crap, there's another like flat out drop by Bain, or it just, like, the offense was good, but I feel like you make one or two more plays and you're doing what you do every Labor Day to Winnipeg. So
Right. I mean the 2-point conversion, Trevor Harris doesn't get locked into his pre-snap read.
No.
There may be a chance. And I mean, no disrespect. I mean, that was a hell of a play by Jones, the linebacker. Like, he read that perfectly and made the right. That was a hell of a defensive play more than anything. That's what I'm going to give credit to on that play more than anything. But Trevor did get caught a little bit too, and I think he knew it.
Well, absolutely. But on a 2-point conversion, it's such chaos on those that you see it at almost at every level of football. You rarely see a quarterback look off his first option. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, no matter, you know, whether you're watching college, NFL, CFL, it's like, okay, they're going for two. That quarterback's basically, you know, you're expecting the receiver to make a play. The defensive player made an even better play. And that's what happened there. Right. Like,
yeah. I mean, and DeRouche put them in that spot. So,
because of my boy Sergio.
So, a 60 yard field goal, too, to add 57 that he absolutely nailed.
Oh, yeah. It just made it look easy. Cool as I.
I mean, that direction was with the wind. So, of course, it looked easier than normal, even.
I had to text him after that one. I did fire Sergio a quick text with A, the fact that Connor had turned heel, and B, saying, hey, man, congrats on the win. And he's like, oh, thanks for the love. I'm like, no, thank you for hitting a 57-yarder in a Rouge, dude. Like,
well, and it's the interesting thought that I brought up, and I kind of thought it at the time, when the Riders were down 12 and they scored the touchdown to go down 6.
Yes.
I had the thought in my mind because I'm like, okay, I am like 80 to 90% certain that the Bombers are probably going to kick at least one more field goal this game.
Yeah. It's Sergio. So, of course they are.
I was like in my head, and I think I even said it on Twitter, I was like, okay, you're down 6 right now. Why not go for 2? And
I'm
then and then
you texted it to me as well.
And then should the likely occurrence happen, and the Bombers kick another field goal, you're only down 7.
Yes.
And I mean, it's obviously easy to respect. This wasn't like a hard, you have to go for 2 moment. But it's definitely a moment. It's definitely something I would have considered in the moment.
No, certainly. Especially early in the game. You think you got lots of time to get more points, right? And I think, again, a big...
Well, especially because apparently Brett Lowther just can't miss an onside kick. So.
No, which is ridiculous. Like, every rule that the football leagues have put into place to be like, it's going to be even harder to do the onside kick. Lowther's like, nah, Biggie, I got it. Like, that was ridiculous. Now
this one was a little bit more of the Bombers missed it situation, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Willie flubbed that. So I don't know why you have Willie. I get it. He's tall and he's big, but why do you have a defensive lineman as you're up back on your onside recovery set? Like,
yeah.
Oh, boy. But I agree with you. And you texted me at the time, like, they should have gone for 2. I'm like, well, of course. I thought they were going to, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially Labor Day being such a game of momentum. Like, it was really fascinating when the Bombers were absolutely putting the screws to the Riders in the first half.
Yeah.
On the broadcast, hearing Paul Lapolis basically said, it's dead in here.
Yeah. Well, and, like, a bunch of us in the press box all said to each other, I thought for sure they were going to get booed there.
Right.
And they didn't, because it wasn't a particularly good end of the half. Things were kind of spiraling again, and it looked like they were going to get the shit kicked out of them. And, I mean, had Zach Kolaris stayed in the game, I think they might have. So I was kind of surprised, and then my thought was, ooh, if people aren't angry, is this bad? Now, I think they may have done enough in the second half to, like, draw people in for at least another week. But
right.
They need to turn this around fast, or I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be enough anger left in people after the last few years.
Well, I think you're right, because this is still a team that has not won a game after Labor Day in 3 years.
Mm. Well, maybe this year they've just gotten all their losing done before Labor Day.
Because, again, you said it, and I don't remember if it was if you and I were texting or were texting with Greg from Piffles, but you basically said, like, at the core, like, the 5-1 start has been deceptive.
Yep. I mean, like, within, you know, give or take a game or two, the record is probably about what it should be.
Roughly. Well, we go back to you when you essentially picked every single game to start the year.
I don't know if they're going to get to 10-8 now, but I mean, 9-8-1 or whatever the hell. Like, it's not. That's pretty close enough, right? Like, I mean, or even if they finish with 8 wins, I mean, that's kind of within the range of where I thought they would be.
Right.
They've just gone about it in a very strange way.
Well, and I think, too...
Had they been going, like, 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1 all the way down to this point in the season, I think most people would be like, yeah, that's probably what they are. Right?
Right. Instead, you go 5-1, and now, 5-1, and people are going, you know, they're starting that hand is hovering over that big red panic button. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it gets easier too, because this West Division this year, the good news
for them is they do have Calgary twice. So
yes, and I think we've universally decided, especially after watching Calgary lately, that they might be the worst team in the league right now.
Yeah. I mean, they were on the 3-Donation Power Rankings this week, so.
Right, right. And I think that's a fair assessment. I don't think Jake Mayer has turned out like, I was watching the end. I just caught the end. Like, literally, I tuned in to that Edmonton-Calgary game when Geno Lewis fumbled forward and they ran it down to the wall. Like, I couldn't have timed that. It's like when I watched Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl, you just tune in at the right time, right? So I think there is hope there, and I think there's even borderline hope of a crossover after watching all the games this weekend.
I mean, Toronto refuses to close that door, so.
Oh, and I mean, to me, Toronto looks a lot worse with Chad Kelly than they have before. I mean, Toronto's got a real tough run of games coming up here. Hamilton, I like the wrinkle with Tagovailoa. Yeah. Like, did you get a chance to see much of that?
Yeah, I saw most of that game before I went out to a family gathering. I didn't see much of Calgary Edmonton live. I recorded and watched it today. So
yeah, the joys of parental leave. You're on. No, I thought that Tagovailoa, just that little bit of dip, like that to me, they're basically doing Chris Streveler, but with a guy that can actually throw the ball.
Yeah, and right? Is not just large, but is actually fast too.
No, exactly. Like. It reminds me of the line in Superbad, he's the fastest kid alive. And I love the fact that Scott Milanovich, for all the wrongs he's committed this year, basically signs this kid and goes, you're an athlete, sure. Here you go. Here's like three simple plays we're going to run you in and out of that basically give such a different dynamic. So I don't think Hamilton, you know,
they won't be a pushover. Their defense is still very Chris Jones, though, and that's 2024 Chris Jones, and that'll remain their Achilles heel. So,
but for the chaos of it all, and because Chad Kelly is an unequivocal piece of shit.
And credit to the Hamilton fans for chanting no means no.
Oh. That was great.
Yeah.
I like the fact that a lot of Hamilton fans had it on their shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I heard some signs got confiscated, but shirts are, you can't tell somebody to take their shirt off, right? Like, don't be a Chad, no means no. Like, just great stuff from the Hamilton faithful. So, that'd be Ticats fans all the way around. So, hopefully they have come up off the mat like the Undertaker has. But this whole season, like, this is wild now, right? Mm. Like, Saskatchewan's biggest advantage, I think there are two wins against Calgary in there, but...
Yeah.
I think unless you're winning Banjo Bowl, I don't know what else there is there. And I think you have to go in and win the Banjo Bowl now.
Yeah. And I mean, mathematically, they probably don't technically have to, but I think just in terms of the vibes around the team and the league, like they feel, I think it was brought up on the Green Zone postgame show, like they feel kind of like Edmonton at the start of the year right now, where they're in these games and there's just a few dumb things that are happening that are preventing them from winning.
Oh, certainly.
And if those things start to break, it feels like it could turn the other way again.
Right.
So I think it has to start this week at the Banjo Bowl. And I know that is difficult. I'm not personally optimistic that they're going to win the game. But at the same time, as we talked about last week, they are kind of due for a win in Labor Day. I mean, at Banjo Bowl. And if there's any addition of the Bombers that they could potentially beat in the Banjo Bowl in recent history, it should be this one.
Oh, certainly.
Despite the advances, especially if Zach Collaros isn't playing, though it sounded like it was precautionary, but they haven't practiced yet, so we'll see.
Right. Well, and the fact with Zach, like, I know he had his shoulder pads off, but the fact that he still had, like, his lower gear on, to me, said in an emergency he was going back.
Well, if he was actually, like, super concussed or something was wrong, he probably wouldn't have come back out at all. So.
No, certainly. And definitely not, like, still with his, like, pants and cleats and everything on. Like,
yeah. So, you know, but, I think... Like, if they don't win this week, I think full-on the panic button, it's already kind of half-pushed and needs to be fully pushed.
Yes.
Because if you just want to go, like, yes, I know mathematically things could still turn around and stranger things have happened in this league, but if you want to just go off vibes right now, I mean, obviously Winnipeg, we all know, is trending in the right direction. It feels like BC had their get-right game where at least... Yeah. I still don't trust their defense, but at least we know their offense can now outperform their defense enough to win football games.
Yes. And they have a very easy schedule the rest of the way.
Yeah. And Edmonton is obviously trending in the right direction. They score points like crazy as well. So they're going to be tough competition. And who knows what the Argos actually are. But again, the crossover door, though I still feel kind of is unlikely, is still technically open.
Certainly.
But it has to start this week. I think for the sake of the morale around the team, not necessarily even the fans, but just the players, the whole organization just needs a win, especially a big win on the road in a Banjo Bowl like this, I think would completely change, you know, the vibes and the feel of everything for this team right now. And if they lose, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Well, and especially because now the narrative comes up if they lose that this is still a team that hasn't won after Labor Day in 3 years.
Yeah. And hasn't beaten anyone besides, like, Hamilton and a Chad Kelly-less Toronto, essentially.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Or tied an Ottawa team in a monsoon, right? Like, yeah. To me, their best performance of the year might be that Ottawa game.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, Ottawa looks legit this year, which is awesome for the fans in Ottawa. Like, Ottawa being good is a good thing for the league, right? It's the same as Montreal being good is a good thing for the league, right? So, you're right about BC. I just looking ahead, like BC's schedule outside of a game against Montreal a week after they've clinched a playoff spot, it's looking pretty easy, right? You've got the door for the crossover. Like BC to me it still has the inside track to get first, right?
Yeah. I don't think the Riders are going to rise back to the point where they're going to finish first in the West. It'll probably be Winnipeg or BC, but
right.
Yeah,
as bizarre as we all kind of thought it would be, we're just getting there in a really weird way.
Yeah, I mean, Saskatchewan and BC had the inside track and just completely slammed the door wide open and broke it off the hinges. So
yeah, and then BC had to basically go.
BC lost five games in a row. The Riders have decided to go winless in six, and here we are. So
yeah, exactly. And BC basically went, okay, we're going to spend all of the money to make sure we have a good team at home. Which, by the way. Awesome. I love to see it. The CFL has a luxury tax on a salary cap. Anyways, bring Betts in. Bring Rourke in. That's what teams should be doing when you're hosting a Grey Cup game. Love to see it out of BC.
Yeah. But of course, the big question, I think, for the Banjo Bowl now will be the status of Zach Collaros.
Yes.
He left that game after, of course, the high hit from Miles Brown. And yet again, it's caused a conversation because anytime Zach Collaros gets breathed on, it becomes a conversation in Winnipeg.
It certainly does.
Across the league, mainly because their president, Wade Miller, has decided to chime in on the subject once again, like he did last year. Now, in fairness, last year's Pete Robertson headbutt was bad. Like that.
Yes.
That was 100%. That was not a football play. That deserved the attention it got. This year, it just felt like whining from Wade, because I mean, let's be real. Like, okay, number one, yes, it was a high hit.
Yeah.
It was flagged. It was a very weird situation where they called PI in the end zone. I'm not 100% convinced that was really PI, but regardless, they called it. So obviously that put the ball at the one, so you can't really move the ball any further from there. So the roughing the passer call that was called on Miles Brown was essentially a free shot.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, so unless you wanted to decline the PI to put on the roughing the passer, you could, but...
which I think which would be dumb. Translation. You know, there were some people out there saying, oh, he wasn't flagged. No, he was flagged. It was just declined because do you take it at the one or do you just give him 15?
It doesn't have to be declined, but it's usually half the distance to the goal or 15 yards, whichever is
greater,
whichever is the number they can produce, but... You can't do anything at the 1 yard line. So
exactly. This is not like the NCAA or NFL where they will like take it to the half yard line. Like the furthest.
Even if they could, like, okay, a half yard to hit a quarterback. Okay. I'll take
right,
that.
Exactly.
So yeah, he was flagged. I am 100% convinced he will be fined. It was appropriately handled by everyone involved. And for him to come out once again and talk about how they need to do a better job protecting quarterbacks in this league, and maybe they do, I don't know. Like, at a certain point, like, this is football. This is a fast-paced, violent football game where things happen. We could start ejecting guys. We could start suspending guys for a million years for hitting a quarterback. But it's not going to stop it. Things just happen. And I know there are a lot of people who think Miles Brown kind of turned into it and hit him with the head. I see enough of a shoulder dip where I think he's trying to hit him with the shoulder. He just didn't have time and it didn't work out and he got him with the helmet.
I thought originally when I saw it at full speed, I thought he turned his head. Like, yeah. That was
and,
my
like,
first
I understand
thought.
Why, like, people would think that. Like, it's definitely a gray area. Yeah. I don't think it's, like, a full-blown 100% intent he meant to do this.
But in slow motion.
But again, intent doesn't matter. He did hit him in the head, so he was appropriately flagged. He will be appropriately fined. And hell, if they suspend him for a game, I'll be fine with that, too.
Well, and I think because of the optics of it, you need to.
I mean, right? Yes and no. I mean, at one end, yes, had Wade Miller kept his mouth shut, maybe. But now if you give in and suspend him, you make it sound like you're trying to appease a team president.
Well, and the only reason I say that, though, is because of the Drew Brown accident.
Yeah.
And we can call it an accident. Like,
yeah, that was just a fluke play. That was a weird thing that
100%,
happened.
100%, right? But
despite what Wade Miller wanted to say.
Right, exactly. Despite what anybody says, despite what Wade Miller wants to say, you still have a guy that's knocked two quarterbacks out of two games.
Yeah.
Right? We can all look at the incident in Ottawa and go, that was clearly an accident. He was hit. He wasn't going for the legs. And again, in slow motion, watching the hit, he was trying to dip his shoulder. It was late. It was to the head. He's been flagged, right? So I think for the optics of the league, I as a Bomber fan, I'm fine with a fine. I think that's the right one, but I think in terms of the optics of it, you need to suspend him for a game just to say, okay, we are protecting the quarterbacks, and I'm with you now. I feel like a suspension was more likely before Wade Miller opened his mouth. Because now if you're Randy Ambrosi, now it looks like you're giving in, right? I think.
Yeah, so now anytime a team's quarterback gets hit, should their president come out crying so they can get a guy suspended?
Right, exactly. And you don't want to open up that can of worms. I feel like had he not, I felt like a suspension was happening.
Yeah, like 100% these conversations happen behind the scenes all the time.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like I would be stunned. Like I am sure Craig Reynolds has picked up the phone at times for certain plays and has called Randy Ambrosi or the head of officials or somebody to discuss something that happened. Like it happens. We're not foolish. Like,
but the difference
is Wade Miller probably did that behind the scenes too. And that is 100% fine. I have no issues with that, but there is no reason to be calling up some friends in the media and basically wanting to say your piece here. And I don't begrudge Jeff for writing the story. Absolutely, Jeff Hamilton, if Wade Miller is willing to talk about this, then you should write the story.
Yes. But, right. Like we've all been there, but you're absolutely right. Like this is the second or third time that Wade Miller has done this, and it's a bit to go back to the opening. It's a bit of a jackass move. Like leave it to the league, have these conversations in private, like everybody else, and nobody's going to care, right?
So,
like
yeah, I mean, if we're going to suspend players for talking about having to play on a bye, I mean, not suspend, fine players for having to talk about playing on a bye week. There better be a fine coming to Wade Miller for this, because last year, okay, you got your free chance, but you're going to do this again on a less egregious play?
Right.
And at other times, I mean, if he was consistent about it, if every time a quarterback got hit in the head, he comes out and says something, fine. But he only seems to do it when it happens to Zach Kolaris.
Well, so, that's exactly it. And it's not like a situation...
Not even consistently to Zach Kolaris.
Right, right. The funny thing is, Zach is like, could you imagine if Winnipeg's O-line had not been as good as it has been the past few years?
Yeah.
Like he'd be out there running his mouth every single time. It's not like Wade Miller. I get it. Wade Miller has a lot of influence in CFL circles. But this isn't like a situation which you and I defended where Brett Lowther spoke out on the chip balls.
Yeah.
Because he is the player rep and he's on the CFLPA. This is just Wade Miller running his mouth and, if anything, hurting his case for a suspension. Because I don't know, like, I'm a bit of a jackass, as we have discussed earlier. If I'm Randy Ambrosi, I'm like, nah, screw you. I'm just going to fine him because you took this to the media.
Yeah. Keep it behind closed doors. Have the conversations. And there are appropriate avenues to bring this up. I mean, this is a few times this has happened now. I mean, there has been rule committee meetings since then. Why haven't the Bombers put things forward to saying, okay, you get X number of roughing the passer calls in the year, you get a game suspension or something? We haven't heard of anything to come forward to the rules committee in terms of further protection of the quarterbacks.
Which is wild, because that just seems like common sense. Like, if you have two misconduct
penalties. In the NFL, when really bad shit happens, the owners tend to wait until those situations start leaking it out, and then they talk about what's going to be talked about at the rules committee, and it'll straight up say, the Philadelphia Eagles are proposing this.
Yes, 100%. And you brought it up, but it's funny. It's amazing that that nobody's brought. Like, it seems like a no-brainer that if you get, let's say, every three roughing the passer penalties you get a game. Or three, you get a fine, and then five, you get a game or something. Like, it just seems like a no-brainer that, like, hell, to go back to the NLL, which has its own issues right now, hello, Panther City Lacrosse Club, to go back to the NLL, even the NLL has rules like that where you can only get so many major penalties before getting a suspension. It just seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah. It does. And, I mean, and at the same time, I mean, yeah, maybe it's something they can consider. Maybe there are more things to do, but at the other side of it is, this is still football at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, we've tried. We've tried so much to protect the quarterbacks, and they're all still getting hurt every year. I don't really, like, what can we really do at this point besides maybe there are, I mean, we could have conversations maybe around the turf in this league and other things like that than maybe hurting players, but I don't really know what else we can do, because anything you implement is not going to stop a quarterback from getting hit in the head.
Put a guardian cap on him.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
That's what I don't get. We're all so concerned about quarterbacks, rightfully so. Why do you not make it mandatory to have your quarterbacks wear guardian caps? If I was a team, like if I'm Craig Reynolds and my revenue, my success, my income all depends on Trevor Harris being on the field, I'm saying, Trevor, you're putting a guardian cap on. Mm-hmm. Like, it just seems like, especially if you're Zach Kolaris, like you're Zach Kolaris again. That hit, it didn't look like it knocked him out. It was looked pretty precautionary. You know, it looked as innocent as a headshot can get. As weird as it says, it feels to say that.
I may have committed some light treason.
Right, that's exactly it. But how the hell is he not wearing a guardian cap? I don't care if it makes you remember. Like, God, I'm trying to think of what they called him. Like. They had the foam exterior that literally make guys look like the Great Gazoo back in like the 90s. Like the guardian cap even has like matching colors. Throw that on if you're the quarterbacks. I'll never understand why they don't.
Yeah, though we did learn this week that actually the Riders don't, at least the Riders, I assume all the teams actually don't have the cover for the guardian cap for their alternate jerseys.
Because
Houdon Bertrand wears one on kickoff coverage.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the retro logo thing, so he had to wear a black one.
Oh, okay.
Because for some reason, apparently, he couldn't wear the other one, just the regular logo one. I don't know why. But
I don't know why
the difference between black and that is. Maybe that was a thing. I don't know. But regardless, yeah. Apparently, I guess they only have the one logo, the one cover for it. So.
Which I guess makes sense. But I still don't get if you're a quarterback or you're the league, that you're not mandating those. Like, this seems like... I feel like we're the first guys to say that hockey players should wear visors.
Mm-hmm. I'm almost the point of hockey. Like, I don't understand why they don't wear full cages, quite frankly, but
I put a full bird cage on because I can't go to work if I break my jaw. So I can't go to work. I can't do this podcast and I can't drink if I break my jaw. So those are three big red flags.
Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.